Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. Like always, I have a question for you. Do you think your religion is better than the others? I know that's a loaded question, but I'm trying to access that part of your thinking that believes converting people to a religious system makes us somehow close to God. In this series, I'm exposing how the modern church today has fallen into the same trap as the church in Galatia by insisting on religious rule-keeping, rituals, and obedience as a measure of belief. But what if the gospel doesn't require conversion? Join me now as I prove that belief has nothing to do with perfunctory religious obligations, and it has everything to do with freedom. And once we wake up to embrace the freedom available to all nations, or shall I say heathen, we are going to be able to see beyond everything and liberate from conversion and religious power plays into a life of freedom promised by the gospel. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for coming back for another episode of Beyond Everything Radio. Welcome to podcast number 167. I'm your host, Kevin Winder. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things. So glad to have you with me. Welcome to the program. Welcome to Sunday. And folks, if you have just joined us for the first time, or you're re-engaging because of a request that you might have seen online or something else, let me just give you a little bit of a catch-up. You're in a series where this is week number 3, and we're looking at the book of Galatians, and that's in the Bible. Now, hold on a minute if you're one of those people who says, oh, geez, this is another Bible study. I am out of here. Please, don't run away yet. And if you are a well-studied Bible student, may I invite you to stick around, because I am willing to bet your pastor has never taught Galatians like I'm teaching it this time. So, wow, that's pretty loaded, right? Well, it is. And today we're going to talk about freedom from conversion. Freedom from conversion, meaning conversion is not necessary. Do you believe that's true? I mean, if you're an evangelical, then you think, gosh, everybody has to accept Jesus in their heart. If you are a Muslim, you're certain that the only way to please Allah is the five pillars of Islam and to become a diligent Muslim, right? If you're a Jew, then it's following the law. Salvation came on Mount Sinai. I'm going to get into some of this stuff later. And so every world religion seems like it's trying to convert you. If you're part of the Eastern traditions of Hinduism or Buddhism, then it's all about meditation, right? You get all the secret powers when you meditate. That's when you get enlightenment. That's when you find your true self. That's when it all happens, only through meditation. But what if the gospel, the good news, actually has a bigger, wider message than any particular religion, especially the truncation of Christianity, right? So let's get started with freedom of conversion, or freedom from conversion. And last week, I know I touched a nerve. I tasered your theological framework. I get it. But I had to. And if you hadn't listened, go back and listen to the previous episode where I wrote, it's called Paul Writes WTF. And you figure out why Paul is asking the church, WTF? You see, I had to kind of shock the system a little bit. And the reason is that the state of the church today has gone so far off the rails that it is completely unrecognizable from what's depicted in Scripture. And I'm just amazed at how contemporary evangelical Christianity continues to think of itself as though the church going around, buzzing around, promoting itself today is so similar somehow to what was happening in the first century church. It's unrecognizable. You think I'm overstating it? Well, consider this. The work of John the Baptist as the forerunner for Jesus was, as I said in my series last summer, Jesus is the forerunner of subversion. Well, so was John the Baptist. It's all about subverting institutional power. And I went on to prove that. Now, the result of the work of the John the Baptist and the work of Jesus in the early first century world was that people with varying beliefs in God, and the whole Bible stories are all about people who come from very different backgrounds, who come to understand that God is somehow in a relationship with them. So this wasn't just about Jewish people, the most religious of the time. This is about Samaritans who were considered half-breeds and Romans who were considered total heathens, tax collectors, which were worse than that, fishermen, which were working class workers, prostitutes, kings. There's a whole genre of every single slice and strata of humanity. It's all pictured there in the New Testament. And all of them, in each of those situations, each of those categories, we have these stories where they are put right with God. And the word for that, the theological term, is justified. They were all justified with God for no other reason. They didn't subscribe to any religion. Christianity hadn't even started. They couldn't even have become an evangelical if they wanted. But they were justified with God for no other reason than Christ erased their perceived gap between themselves and God, right? So only the Jews saw themselves as right with God. And of course, Jesus was constantly exposing how they weren't. Everybody else just assumed, I'm far from God because I'm not like those religious dudes over there. Not unlike what we see in our world today. And what Jesus showed them is that their gap between them and God was an illusion. It never really existed, and that the work of God was to subvert all these institutional powers to allow people to regain personal power and freedom. And Paul goes on so far to say that the good news, the gospel, was first given to Abraham so that it would justify Gentile sinners, that is, so that all nations, and the term there for all nations is ethen, right, which means a nation. It also means heathen would be blessed. Now, reframe that so you understand it. The gospel was first given to Abraham. This means the gospel is not a traditionally evangelical Christian thing. It does not belong to Christianity as we have modernly defined it. It went to Abraham first. Okay? Now, it's there so that all nations, all heathen, could be blessed, meaning that it wasn't just the people of Abraham, the descendants of Abraham, which the Jews saw themselves as, and by, you know, just to make a point here, all Muslims see themselves as descendants of Abraham as well, and so do Christians, now grafted in, right? But this just widens the net. It's saying that all nations, all people, all heathens, all unbelievers, all Gentiles, all sinners would be blessed, would receive the blessing of Abraham, not just the Jews. Right, this is Galatians 3:8. That's an amazing depiction of the gospel. It means that all people of all beliefs are put right with God, regardless of what they've done or what they've believed. But let's just pause right here for a minute. Not everybody believes that, do they? In fact, I'm willing to bet if you're a Christian that you grew up in a church that never taught you this. I'm willing to bet that they never taught you this, that the gospel is made you savable, but you have to cross the line and do something like accept Jesus in your heart. Those people who were Muslims or atheists or something else, they could never receive the gospel unless they converted somehow to Christianity. Right? That's probably what you were taught. That's what I was taught. And it took me reading the Bible hundreds of times in the Greek and the original language to finally have it pressed out of me. I had to ask enough hard questions before I finally decoded my programming of evangelical Christianity. Now, this isn't the gospel is something that religion hates. Okay, this gospel idea of everybody receiving, being put right with God. Religion hates it. It just can't believe it. And I'm going to come back to that a little bit later. But, you know, like I said earlier, every character in the Bible operated within an institution or a framework that controlled or oppressed their behavior. I mean, Jews were in a religious institution. Rome was certainly an oppressive institution. Tax collectors lived in their own kind of framework. You know, fishermen, prostitutes, everybody else who were marginalized, maybe, an invalid or somebody who was sick lived under an oppressive system as well. And the gospel that Jesus offers was just a way to live among institutional power, but remain free of its oppressive worldview, meaning you don't abandon all institutions, but what you do is you retake your identity back. You reclaim personal power so that the oppressive worldview of the institution no longer dominates you. This liberates you from the inside out. And this is what salvation is. Salvation is liberation. It's freedom. It's the ability to see. It's what so many people call enlightenment today, right? This podcast is all about helping you to see beyond everything. It's all about experiencing this liberating view. Paul calls it faith, or believing the good news, believing the gospel. So all these terms are simply terms that mean waking up, right? And the early church, when it was founded, was a continuation of Jesus' work of liberating people from the captivity of their frameworks, religious and otherwise. And how do I say that? Well, because they focused on teaching Jews to relax their laws and rules and keeping. They didn't make them abandon Judaism, right? The early church was mostly made up of Jewish people. But then there's this other side of it where it wasn't focusing any longer on just Jewish people. Paul had a very big ministry to the Gentiles, right? To the unbelievers, the sinners, the non-religious people. And so we know that they needed freedom from their institutions as well, and that was the work of the gospel. And as people are enlightened, we see this across the globe, as people gain faith, they unify in freedom despite the diversity that they all share. So if you fast forward to today, the church has really become a framework of captivity now, isn't it? And it pits itself against all others, right? If you're inside of a church, it's like, hey, we have the winning cinnamon roll recipe and everybody else is deficient. So you have to believe the way we believe, or else you're going to be punished by God forever in hell. And therefore, that's a scare tactic to get you on our team. And if you're on our team, once you're on, we're going to keep you in by making you really fearful over all those bad things you do and all the bad things you think about. And how in the world are you going to make it across the line if you don't have our system of purification, right? Religion prefers distinction over union, right? The church is supposed to be this place of great unity despite great diversity, but religion has really moved away from what the church is supposed to be, and it rather have distinctions. And you go to any church website, they all have a list of their distinctive beliefs so that they can help you understand that they're not like those other 5 billion churches out there, right? It's all about control instead of freedom. Now, in unbelief, and make no mistake about this, please. Religion is in unbelief of the gospel because it sees good news, this gospel, as way too good to be true. There's no way God is saving everybody equally. There is no way that's possible because, well, after all, we're doing all these really hard, tenuous things. We've made all these big sacrifices, and it's just not fair. God would be unjust to do that. And, you know, they need to read their Bible and learn about the parable of the workers in the vineyard. But much of the church today, just like in Galatia, is in unbelief and fears freedom. And that's why I'm doing this series. I'm hoping, I'm praying. There's a pastor out there. There's a church leader, a deacon, an elder, a church member who's going to church and is actually thinking about these questions in the real sense, right? Does your church really offer something to the rest of the world? Or is it really just playing, you know, Red Rover with the city and just hoping and praying somebody will come over and start believing just like them, but not ask any real hard questions. Consider the words of Paul in Galatians 2, 4 through 6, where he says, due to the falsely pretending brothers, and the word there is pseudodelphos, right? Pseudodelphos, false brothers. It's what I would call the fake ID. There's a group of people in their church which had a fake ID that slipped in to the group, the church, to spy out the freedom that they had in Christ Jesus in order to gain control over them. And Paul just says to them, we didn't even give in to submission for an hour, for a moment, so that the truth of the gospel might remain among you, right? And so what is he saying? He's saying, look, in church today, you'll see it today as you did back then. This is how I can say the church today isn't the same problem as the church in Galatia. It's that you have people that just cannot handle free people, right? Most religion cannot handle free people. They don't want you going for a run on Sunday morning or riding your bike on Sunday morning. They need you to be at the worship center doing their bidding and playing their tunes and running their system, making it work, validating the pastor and his ego program, right? This is what it's all about. But they have to control you, not allow you to have the freedom. I mean, if you really had the freedom to express yourself and your beliefs, if you had the freedom to live a certain way without any kind of ritual or rites or all this other stuff, that there's no way they could measure you. They couldn't control you. They couldn't, you know, be empowered and have power over you. And this is why institutional religion hates the gospel. And so what happened? I mean, who were these false brothers with the fake ID? I mean, the Jews hated the idea. Listen to this, folks. Jews hated the idea that non-Jewish people, Gentile sinners, as they like to call them, could be put right or justified with God, with Yahweh, and not have to convert to Judaism. But that was exactly the message of the early church. Hey, Gentiles, you don't have to become a Jew. And yet, guess what? Yahweh, the God of the Jews, will justify you just like the Jews. They were livid. They were incensed. This made God unjust in their eyes. And it's exactly the same in our modern world today, in every world religion. Nobody in a religious system will say that God will save you no matter how you want to do it. They all say God only saves you through our mechanism of action. Religious people will not believe that people can be put right with God unless they convert to their religion. They run their program. They do their thing, right? If you're a Jew, belief comes from salvation. And salvation comes from Mount Sinai, where the law was. And so if you're put right with God, it's because you followed the law and the tradition. Only those things, obedience and compliance, gets you right with God. If you're a Muslim, you have to believe that Allah is only merciful to those sincerely who sincerely follow the five pillars. And I've read the Quran several times, and I can tell you, Allah is not merciful to anybody but the sincere person who wants to return to the five pillars, right? Everybody else suffers. Evangelicals like to believe that only those who accept Jesus into their heart can go to heaven. That's how they like to frame it. If you don't convert and become a Christian, then there's no way God can save you. After all, Jesus said he was the way, the truth, and the life, and nobody comes to the Father except by me. And of course, there's only one way to interpret that passage, and that is that only good Christians go to heaven. Not the case, folks. You know, the Eastern religions are not off the hook either. Buddhists and Hindus, they all believe that enlightenment and oneness are only possible through meditation and austerity. So all of religion kind of rejects the gospel notion that everybody is put right with God. It's too good to be true. It's kind of like that old commercial with the person shows up to get his laundry at the, you know, dry cleaner, and the Asian guy says, no tiki, no washi. Right? That's kind of the message of religion. No tiki, no washi. You don't give us what we want. You don't get what you want. Right? But here's this big problem. It's called the gospel. The good news says there is no requirement to convert. I'm just going to let that sink into all of our hard heads out there. Okay? The good news, the gospel, says there is no requirement to convert. So all those people holding out saying, I am not joining your team, I'm not going to become like you, maybe had something going on. Maybe they were right. You see, Jews remained Jewish. Gentiles remained unaffiliated. Each remained a part of their institutional belief system. Paul even goes on to say, remain in the state that you were called. In other words, don't try and become something else. Just stay who you are, how you are. And only then did they have the faith to believe that God had justified them. You see, that was all it took, is just realize that there isn't a gap between you and God, like you've been taught. Of course, religion wants there to be a gap, because if they can have a gap, they can offer you their solution at a price. It's going to cost you time, talent, treasure. It's going to cost you your money and your days and your weekends, but at least you can close that gap. Right? And if you're a heathen, a Gentile, a sinner, then you probably figure, well, if there is a God, then God doesn't like me anyway, so I'll just take whatever gap there is. See, this kind of faith, just believing that there isn't a gap, subverts all institutional power because it liberates the believer. It's freedom from conversion. Isn't that amazing? Freedom from conversion. Now, there's something else instead of conversion the Bible's very interested in. It's called our completion. I'm much more interested in that. But we're going to get to that in a later talk. But this is how we know the early church was not the beginning of a new religion, folks. See, Christianity wasn't like, oh, now we're a new alternative religion against every other kind of religion in the world. It was never intended to be a religion. If Jesus came back and saw that this is now a world religion that is competing for your converts, then he would say somehow they missed it. You see, they were free in the early church from rituals, from religious practice, from fearful obedience, and from obligation. They were free into a life of faith to experience God in the whole of life. So it's like, hey, God's everywhere. Whether you eat or drink, do all things to the glory of God. Doesn't matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter where you're going. You don't have to circumcise yourself and cut off the tip of, you know, little boys' wieners and stuff anymore. You don't have to keep all these festivals and feasts. You don't have to declare some foods good and some foods bad anymore. It's not like that. See, this is a whole new framework. And these very diverse people shared only the belief that Christ Jesus revealed how close they actually were to God. I mean, a Samaritan could never feel close to God. And then she has one meeting with Jesus and realizes that she's so much closer to God than she ever realized. Now, there's going to be more on how that actually works later in the series, right? But now let's just focus on this reality here. Christianity is not an alternative religion. It never was. The gospel doesn't require conversion to a religion. See, a person who is truly liberated on the inside quickly realizes that no ritual or practice or perfunctory religious service can possibly make them closer to God. I mean, you must have realized this at some point, that there are sometimes you go to church and it didn't do a dang thing for you. In fact, you might have been better off if you just went for a run or a bike ride or went hiking or skiing or sat home and watched the game. All that stuff might be nice. It's a nice container, but it's not required. I'm not saying you don't need it at all. I think there's a time and a place for all of that stuff. But let's just acknowledge that it's just window decorations, right? We are all as close or as far as we can ever be. The early church started out with this kind of liberation, but most of the people in the early church couldn't handle it, and neither can they today. And so since they couldn't handle it, they were pressurizing, you know, the early church to get in and, you know, circumcise their young and to abstain from foods. But when this finally dawns on us, if you're hearing this, and this is the first time you're hearing it, if you can just relax your desire to push against this, you relax your sense that, oh, Kevin, you're teaching universalism or something like that. Just hold on. Just put that on the table for a minute and just absorb the gospel in its bigness first. We can get to its narrowness on another day, but just hold on to its bigness, its wideness, its inclusion, its global inclusion. See, when you start to get really honest about this, you start getting really honest about your religious engagement, and you know that attending church doesn't do that much for us, does it? Sometimes it might. There are days when it just hits you right between the eyes and touches your heart, but most days you do better on the slopes. You do better with a good run. And it's estimated that 50% of people attending a religious service are merely going through the motions. I have a link to that stat on my blog. And as a pastor, you know, 7 years ago, I could no longer insist that my congregation prioritize the Sunday big show. Why would I try and sell the Sunday big show anymore if I knew that they'd actually be better off in many times without it? See, religions like to pressure the sheeple into religious attendance. And that's always because they need the money, they need the control, or they need the ego of validation, right? That's really what it's all behind it. And I moved online so that I could regain the freedom of the gospel and make sure that I wasn't hybridizing it with some burden or obligation or make-believe. And to this day, I still have people calling me saying, hey, Kevin, you should start a church. You should give me a path. You should write down some simple things that we could all follow now that we're kind of disengaged from the church. We're kind of floating nebulously out there in the world. We really need something. It's just the cry to have a king rule over you. But trust me, you don't need it. And I'm not going to give that to you. What you need to discover is, what is the Spirit doing within you, and how will you respond? The question is, what do you do with your freedom? In Galatia, the church was pressuring the non-Jews to be circumcised and to conform to old Jewish practices of obtaining and abstaining from certain foods. And Paul's primary focus was to show non-religious people, the Gentiles, the freedom from the gospel. And Peter, by contrast, focused on helping religious people to become free themselves from their useless ritual into a life of freedom. So there wasn't two gospels, as it says. There was a gospel to the Jew and the gospel to the Gentile. These are two applications of the same gospel. And why? Because both religious and non-religious people struggle to believe it. It's too good to believe that God has made it good with you. Folks, if you're listening to me, listen, you and God, you're good. You and God are good. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter what you believed. There's not a single person so far away that God can't find you and hasn't already reached out and made you good. Any gap that you have between you and God is simply fiction that you're choosing to believe in your head. Instead, rather, why don't you believe the good news, the gospel, that says that gap has been closed? That is too good to be true for too many of us. And so we'd much rather live in unbelief than actually face how the dominoes fall once we actually believe that there isn't anything separating us from God. And so Paul and the church were free to live like Gentiles, like it says in verse 14. And so are we today. And next week, I'm going to dive into this one. Boy, I love that sentence. Live like Gentiles. See, religious people see this as living like sinners. And then they go around and they label the ungodly, the worldly, the corrupt. You know, they give us all kinds of titles and things. And we're going to look much closer at that next week. But today, here's the question for you. What have you done with your freedom? Did you even know you had it? And how have you responded to the institutions in your life that seek to gain control over you, to gain control over your time, to gain control over your talent and how you use it, and to gain control over your treasure and your finances? How have you responded? Have you just believed the message that, hey, this is the answer over here. Don't believe all those worldly people out there. You know, we're the ones. You have to wind it really, really tight because God is up there looking down at you with a big stink eye. And if you get this wrong, he's going to squash you like a bug. But if you get it right, he's probably going to forgive you, at least until you screw it up again. And then you'll have to come back to us for more forgiveness and more helping you get it right with God, right? That's the struggle of living as a sinner saved by grace. Is that the message? Is that what you've given control to? Folks, the gospel message is bigger, it's wider, it's more inclusive, and it's so much better news than that. We can do so much better than that. Are you still focused on conversion? Are you focused on conversion because you've never really grasped the width of the gospel? Think about that, folks. Think about this. What changes for you if the gospel never required conversion in the first place? What changes for you if the gospel doesn't require conversion for anybody else? Think about that, and we're going to come back and explore that next week. Greetings, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder from Beyond Everything Radio, and I really want to encourage you to go to my website right now and sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter, and you can find it at kevinwinder.com. When you sign up, you'll join all the others in the virtual space. Each Sunday morning, you'll get a link to my blog, my radio program, and my podcast. You'll be the first to access new content, uncoaching opportunities, and webinars, and so much more. Sign up now and you'll get a free e-version of my book, Getting Better When You Can't. Now, go to kevinwinder.com and remember, I spell Kevin like the number 7. Go to kevinwinder.com and look for Winder's Windshield and sign up today.